Good morning. One of the biggest Supreme Court terms in recent years ends with a flurry of major decisions. The Washington Post reflects on how the justices reshaped the country's political landscape and beyond.
I think one theme that's very clear from this incarnation of the Roberts Court is that they have greatly enlarged presidential power.
New financial disclosures reveal how Trump reaped a billion-dollar windfall since returning to office. And starting today, Medicare will help cover weight loss drugs, but there's a catch. It's Wednesday, July 1st. I'm Cecilia Lay, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. The Supreme Court just wrapped up a busy year of highly consequential decisions that will not only shape President Trump's agenda, but the country for many years to come. We spoke with Washington Post reporter Justin Juvenal about some of the most significant rulings and the major questions they've raised.
The biggest theme that dominated this term was President Donald Trump's agenda. We saw a number of cases on the court's emergency docket, where it decides cases on a temporary basis, and on its regular docket, where it makes final rulings dealing with Trump policies, from his bid to end birthright citizenship, his policy to deploy the National Guard to Chicago.
The court delivered a mixture of blows and wins to the president. Those blows include his signature tariff policy, his efforts to end birthright citizenship, to limit mail-in voting, and fire a member of the Federal Reserve. But the president did walk away at the end of the court's term with much more power than he had before.
The Supreme Court has allowed him to go forward with firing thousands of federal workers. It's allowed him to drastically cut the Education Department, which was set up by Congress.
The court also gave the executive branch authority to fire people at will who work across roughly two dozen independent agencies.
That allows him to exert much greater authority over those agencies and how they operate. And that will give him a major tool to not only carry out his agenda, but as his critics sometimes say, to reward his cronies and to punish his enemies.
A number of the court's rulings could help Trump's party win elections. The justices lifted limits on how much political parties can spend on advertising, which Juvenal says could give the Republicans a big boost heading into the midterms. Democrats tend to raise more money through individual candidates, but the GOP political committees have a much larger war chest, more than $100 million available to spend. And the court gave Republicans another possible edge in the midterms with its decision on the Voting Rights Act. Back in April, the court struck down a majority Black congressional district in Louisiana, ruling that its design relied too much on race.
One of the major themes of this Roberts Court is this idea of a colorblind constitution, which is the idea that all people should be treated the same under the law and the constitution, and there shouldn't really be ways of redressing past discrimination by creating programs that can advantage minority groups. And we really saw that come to the forefront this term in the Voting Rights Act decision.
Juvenal says the implications of that ruling could become apparent in November.
Legal experts expect it's going to result in far fewer minority candidates in office. And that could have big implications for the midterm elections because these states are redrawing congressional districts ahead of the midterms when the balance of power in Congress is up for grabs between the Democrats and Republicans, and it could affect the outcome of who controls the House.
Other areas of anti-discrimination law are already seeing an impact from this ruling. The Trump administration is now saying the court's decision also applies to agricultural programs and employment. Zooming in on another Supreme Court ruling, justices upheld two state laws that barred transgender athletes from participating in girls' and women's sports teams. One challenge came from a trans woman in Idaho who was blocked from trying out for the track and field team at her university. Another came from a mother in West Virginia who challenged a law preventing her child, a trans girl, from playing on her middle school's sports team. Brooke Migden covers LGBTQ plus rights for the 19th, a newsroom that focuses on gender and politics.
Plaintiffs in that case, they had argued that those bans violate both the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause and Title IX, which is a landmark federal statute prohibiting sex-based discrimination in school sports.
Split along ideological lines, the six conservative justices concluded the bans violated neither. More than half of U.S. states have similar laws on the books, but the justices opted against a broader ruling.
What we got from the court today is a pretty narrow ruling in that it only applies to West Virginia and Idaho and their respective transgender sports bans.
That means states without bans can continue allowing transgender student athletes to compete on girls' and women's sports teams. It also means states with bans, or those considering them, might feel confident their laws will survive any legal challenges. President Trump called it a big win, and West Virginia Republican Senator Shelley Moore Capito told Fox News it could jumpstart the push for similar federal legislation.
This keeps them safe, it keeps them in fair competition, and it lays to rest, I think, a lot of questions around the country as to what does it mean to play in women's sports. We have tried at the federal level to pass laws, but we've been batted down here. I think this may open up the gates for that if, in fact, we do need a federal law.
Advocates say these bans shut out transgender girls and women from competing in their chosen sport. Speaking to AP before the verdict, Becky Pepper Jackson, the teenager at the center of the West Virginia case, spoke to AP from a sports field.
This is a big part of my life. I've spent most of my childhood being in the sport case. I felt like I had to be a part of that because I think every transgender girl should have the right to be who they are and play on the sports team that they identify with. Because it's no one's opinion who you are and what you should be doing.
The bans would affect a very small number of people. In West Virginia, Pepper Jackson is the only known athlete subject to the law. But the issue has gained a lot of traction in the last few years. It was an important part of the president's campaign.
Kamala even supports letting biological men compete against our girls in their sports. Kamala is for they, them. President Trump is for you.
And shortly after taking office, Trump signed an executive order aimed at keeping transgender women out of women's sports. It's created something of a divide inside the Democratic Party, with some vocally defending transgender athletes and others appearing to shift in their positions in light of public opinion. In a 2025 New York Times Ipsos poll, nearly 80% of respondents opposed allowing transgender women to compete in women's sports. House Democratic Caucus Chair Pete Aguilar said decisions on trans athletes should be decided locally in consultation with coaches and parents.
We tend to believe in leaving this up to local sports organizations and groups who have figured this out. I don't know why those decisions can't be made locally and why we can't allow coaches and teachers and parents and kids to arrive at a conclusion that they can live with. This court believes a little differently.
Some sporting bodies have changed their policies over the past year. The International Olympic Committee opted to limit the women's category to biological females, citing performance advantages for the male sex. And the NCAA, which governs U.S. college sports, brought its own ban to line up with Trump's executive order. Migden noted to us that following the Supreme Court decision, Justice Kavanaugh went out of his way to extend empathy to the young plaintiffs in the case.
Kavanaugh wrote in Tuesday's majority opinion that students' desire to compete in school sports warrants respect, and that no student on either side of the issue, whether transgender or cisgender, deserves to be, in his words, ostracized or vilified. Justice Kavanaugh's point is to reinforce that a lot of these people challenging sports bans are young people, a lot of them children.
The future for trans athletes in women's sports will be on the ballot this November, with Arizona, Colorado, and Washington states likely holding votes on the matter. Starting today, millions of Americans on Medicare can qualify for affordable weight loss drugs known as GLP-1s. Under a temporary program, Medicare recipients can get prescriptions for Wegovy, Zepbound, and Foundayo for just $50 a month, much cheaper than paying without insurance.
That can be $250, $300, $400 a month, which is unaffordable for a lot of people, especially seniors on a fixed income.
Christopher Rowland is a healthcare reporter at The Washington Post.
And so you're going to have a number of people who are obese and who are over 65 years old who are now going to be able to take advantage of this benefit.
Now, federal law actually prohibits Medicare covering weight loss drugs, but the government is running this as a temporary pilot program for 18 months. Roland says the short-term nature of this particular program raises some practical issues.
Starting in January of 2028, unless they come up with some new program, the people who are on this program who are paying $50 a month are going to face either higher costs or the prospect of not taking the drugs any longer, which obviously is not a very welcome development for them.
And if the treatment is short-term, then the benefits might be too. Numerous studies suggest many users regain at least some of the weight they lost after coming off GLP-1s. And other improvements, things like blood sugar and cholesterol, can revert backwards too. Some clinicians argue that the drugs should be seen as treating a chronic condition, which typically requires long-term medication. The healthcare organization KFF estimates nearly 4 million people will qualify for the program, but Roland says it won't be an easy process. Doctors have a set of criteria based around a patient's BMI. That means the program is intended to help people with health risks associated with obesity. Patients looking to lose weight for cosmetic or lifestyle reasons wouldn't qualify.
The doctor will certify that, yes, you meet these criteria. They will send it in to this pharmacy. The pharmacy will send it to Medicare. Medicare will say you have to do a prior authorization. So then it'll go in a circular pattern, and then your provider and the pharmacy will have to submit a prior authorization form. They'll review that. They're saying they can do this in under 72 hours, but a lot of people aren't sure that's going to be that easy.
If that all sounds complicated, it is. It could mean some folks don't get their prescriptions.
I'm told that a lot of providers might not understand the complexities of who qualifies. So some people might come away disappointed. And the advice that I'm told people are going to be getting is that you just got to keep trying.
Another open question is, how much will this cost taxpayers? The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid haven't released estimates, but one expert told Roland it could add $4 to $5 billion to Medicare's tab. Meanwhile, Congress could take action and allow these types of drugs to be covered permanently, but not everyone is on board.
There is still politically some stigma about weight loss, and a lot of politicians and lawmakers and people in the general public think that it is ultimately still a behavior problem and that people who are obese are just not trying hard enough. Well, you know, the medical establishment now knows that's just not true for so many people who is they're genetically predisposed to obesity. They have a number of factors that keep them from losing weight.
Here are a few other stories we're following today. President Trump earned well over $1 billion in cryptocurrencies and digital tokens last year. That's according to nearly 1,000 pages of financial disclosures released yesterday. One of his biggest sources of revenue came from an investment firm tied to the United Arab Emirates. It controversially bought a $500 million stake in World Liberty Financial, the crypto company founded by Trump and his sons. And Trump's own coin, branded with his name, earned him more than $600 million, according to the filings. He announced that coin shortly before the inauguration, and it shot up briefly before plummeting 80%. The disclosures reveal he now earns most of his money through ties to digital assets. It's a financial mechanism the administration has enthusiastically supported, pushing for policies beneficial to the industry. A White House spokesperson said neither Trump nor his family had ever engaged in conflicts of interest. The disclosures stand in stark contrast to Vice President Vance's. That came in at 17 pages, and one of his major boosts came from a jump in sales for his memoir, Hillbilly Elegy. The Republican congressman who disappeared from public view for nearly 4 months was back on Capitol Hill yesterday. New Jersey Representative Tom Kaine spoke on the House floor and addressed his unexplained absence.
Several months ago, due to health concerns, I entered the hospital for some testing. I did not believe that this would result in a long-term stay. I was given the diagnosis of depression.
Kane missed more than 140 votes in the chamber during his time away, which complicated matters for House Republican leaders who struggled to pass bills with their thin majority. He's running again in a key district that's expected to be competitive in the midterms. During his speech, he said he had deepened his appreciation for mental health support and reassured constituents that he was, quote, healthier, stronger, and excited to return to the work that I love. And finally, it was a busy day in NBA free agency, and one major name says he's switching teams. Again, LeBron James is leaving the Los Angeles Lakers after 8 years and one NBA championship with the franchise. James says he is playing next year, but hasn't revealed where. His tenure in LA comes with some pretty high accomplishments. On top of his championship, he became the league's all-time leading scorer and was the first player ever to team up with his son when he and his oldest child, Bronny, took the court together in 2024. James will play in his record 24th year when he laces up next season, and the Lakers organization has thanked him for his years in LA. So far, the Golden State Warriors have popped up as a potential destination, but no formal announcement has been made. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The Atlantic explores American yard sales and the deal-making, weirdness, and heartbreak that comes along with buying your neighbor's discards. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.